Good afternoon, sir. What is your name, sir? Hello? Can you hear me? Hello?
Hello?
Hello, sir?
She's curious.
Hello? Can you hear me now, sir?
Sounds like it's
for
you. Can you hear me, sir?
Yes, sir. We can hear you now. And what is your name, sir?
Stephen
Hummert. Okay, Mr. Hummert. If you just hold on for one moment, the Honorable Mr. Louis Kiwanis, I believe, will be conducting a hearing, so we'll just hang on to the phone, and he will be right with you, and I believe we are supposed to make a phone call, so let's see if we can get the phone call, and then we'll go to the Honorable Mr. Louis Kiwanis. So just hold on to the phone, sir.
Yes, sir.
Yes, this is the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. I believe that we had a note saying that you wish to participate in the parole hearing for Mr. Hummert this afternoon. Am I correct?
Daddy, thank you for calling.
Okay, if you could just hold on. This hearing is just about to begin, and the Honorable Mr. Louis Kiwanis will be conducting the hearing, and he will call on you at the appropriate time, ma'am.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Thank you. Honorable Board Chairman. Mr. Hummert, can you hear me clearly?
Yes, sir.
Can you state your full name and ABC number for the record?
Yes, sir. I'm Stephen Henry Hummert. My number is 089109.
Thank you, sir. You're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a 31412B hearing to consider parole to your next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. I would like to introduce you to the members of the board conducting the hearing with you today. If you can see on your video conference screen, we have, starting on the opposite end of the bench, working toward me, with the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse. At the center of the bench, we have our esteemed board chairman, Dr. C.T. Wright. Next to me is the Honorable Mr. David Neal. And my name is Louis Quinones. I'll be serving as the panel lead for your hearing.
Yes, sir.
I would like to begin your hearing with a summary. Mr. Stephen Hummert, ADC number 089109, is 57 years old. He's currently serving a life sentence for 6 concurrent charges, including aggravated assault, kidnapping, sexual assault, and sexual abuse. Does this sound correct so far, Mr. Hummert?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. He was found guilty by court verdict, and regarding the instant offenses, he was found guilty by court verdict on November 15, 1991, and sentenced on December 16, 1991. He was approximately 27 years old at the time of the incident offenses and already serving 8 years of adult probation out of the state of Texas for a 1986 theft conviction. Should Mr. Hummert be paroled to his next consecutive sentence, he is facing a 3-year and 9-month prison term for 2 concurrent charges of escape and conspiracy to escape in the second degree, committed on September 29, 2000. Again, does this sound correct, Mr. Hummert?
Yes, sir.
He has been parole eligible since November 10, 2016. I will read a short summary of the offense in question, although I will acknowledge that it's a pretty detailed incident, and the summary that was provided to us by the Maricopa County Attorney's Office is pretty extensive. On July 16, 1989, at approximately 3:45 a.m., Ms. Mary Ray Aguirre was sexually assaulted in the front yard of 1723 South Parkside in Tempe. Her assailant threatened her at gunpoint and forced her to have vaginal intercourse. He then had her turn over and he began to strangle her. During the ensuing struggle, her head was severely beaten and lacerated by an unknown object. Mr. Hummert fled in a vehicle. The victim went to a nearby home and was transported to Tempe St. Luke's Hospital. Police investigation interpreted blood spattering to be caused by impact of Ms. Aguirre's head against decorative bricks. It was unknown if her multiple scalp lacerations were also caused by an impacting weapon. And again, that is only a short version of the offense in question. According to Ames, Mr. Hummer has completed an exceptional amount of programming, including sexual offender treatment program. He has a moderate history of discipline from 1994 through 2009, with his last major on January 25th, 2006, for disobeying an order. This is not a regular parole hearing, but he has a release plan, which includes living with his mother in Mesa or living with his stepmother in Texas. He states he has skills as a brailler, which is to say a typist for braille. We have several letters of support from Mr. Hummer, but we also have numerous letters from victims' representatives adamantly opposing parole. In addition, we have a letter dated December 27, 2018 from the Maricopa County Attorney's Office opposing parole. This appears to be Mr. Hummert's fifth hearing before the board. And before we continue, Mr. Hummert, I will point out again that there were letters of support. There are certainly letters and statements from victims' representatives. And do we have any supporters for Mr. Hummert in the hearing room today? Do we have any victims' representatives? Okay.
Yes.
Thank
I'm
you.
On the phone.
Thank you very much. Near the end of the hearing, you will all be giving, you will all be given an opportunity to speak. And due to time management, certainly you will be given an opportunity to speak. We just ask that you consider time management as we have several hearings today. Okay, Mr. Hummer, this is another chance for the board to get to know you. Can you tell us in your own words about the crimes that resulted in your incarceration and why you should be considered for parole to your next consecutive sentence? Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. It's never easy to talk about the crime that I committed. For a long time, when I first came to prison, I just denied ever committing it. I didn't want to be the person that committed it. And it took a long time for me to mature to the point where I could accept responsibility for it. And I think that's pretty much a lot of the changes that most people see in me today is starting around the year 2000, the time I committed my escape. I think I finally started to grow up a little bit, not age-wise. Age, I was already in my 20s, my 30s, but I just was never very emotionally mature, very immature. I didn't take responsibility for a lot of stuff, and I tended to blame pretty much everything and everybody else. If I got in trouble, it wasn't my fault. It was the officer being too strict, or the rules weren't fair. And when I committed my crime, I think I had that same attitude out on the streets that nothing was my fault and nothing I did could be wrong. And I wish I could take back what I did back then, but I can't change the past. All I can do is work on today, the future, and try to show you that I'm not the same person I was back then. One of the ways I hope you'll recognize that is when I finally started changing my behavior and started accepting responsibility, you can see that my disciplinary history changed. I stopped getting tickets. I pretty much don't get any tickets at all anymore. I stopped being a management problem for the staff in the prison. I accept that I follow the rules now and I can do what I'm told. I'm trying to focus my life on looking towards being productive and doing something that helps other people. And that's what led me to the Braille program over at Meadows Unit now. I'm still working on that. I'm just in the training phase still. And hopefully after about a year or so, I'll be able to earn my certification as a Brailler. And if I'm ever released, that'll be able to help me on the streets do something that's worthwhile and helps other people.
Thank you, Mr. Hummer. Regardless of how this board votes today, and we do have to make some very tough decisions on behalf of the people of Arizona, as one voting board member, I certainly commend you for your behavior inside the Department of Corrections in these recent years. It seems that you had quite a history leading up to the event. You were already on probation out of Texas for numerous thefts. Talk a little bit about that.
If I remember correctly, it was 46 or 47 counts. It all stemmed from when I worked for a fast food restaurant, McDonald's, and I was basically stealing money from them. I was taking money out of the cash drawers. I was a manager, so I was able to cover it up for a long time. And eventually, I got caught. I made a mistake one time, and they started blaming a couple of other people, and I came forward and told them I was the one that did it. I thought that was the right thing to do, but it still landed in my conviction for 46 or 47 counts of theft. And I also, at that time, I had committed a burglary for a place where I was working. And I don't think, if I remember correctly, I was never convicted of that. That was dropped as part of my guilty plea for the theft from McDonald's.
Mr. Hummer, this is a 412B hearing to consider parole to your next consecutive sentence, so it's safe to say this is not the last time you'll be appearing before this board, regardless of how we vote. I recognize that this requires rehashing a pretty heinous crime over and over again, and I think it's hard on everyone, certainly the victims, or certainly the victim. But what was going on that led to your behavior leading to this sexual assault? If I'm not mistaken, this case included stalking leading up to the sexual assault. So what was going on in your life at that time?
Yes, sir. Well, I was married and I had children at the time. I was working, I was employed, but I think I was struggling to basically find a place to work. I just didn't feel happy with the jobs that I was doing. I felt like I wasn't living up to my potential. So I was drinking a lot at the time. I was hanging out with a lot of younger people. By younger, I mean I was in my later 20s, 26, 27. And most of them were in their early 20s or late teens. And I wish I could tell you there was one specific thing that led to this, but I think I just had it in my mind that I could do whatever I wanted, that there were no consequences, that I wouldn't get caught because I thought I was smarter than everybody else. I think that when I look back on it, the drinking allowed me to lose a lot of the inhibitions that would normally stop me from actually going through with the fantasies that I have. And I was beginning to fantasize a lot in my head about just forcing somebody else to have sex with me.
Thank you for that summary, Mr. Hummer. I do want to stop and take note. I believe the prosecutor from Maricopa County Attorney's Office has just showed up in the hearing room, correct?
Yes, sir.
That is correct, Your Honor. I'm a prosecutor with the Maricopa County Attorney's Office, Crystal Dickinson.
Thank you. As you well know, near the end of the hearing, we'll give you an opportunity to speak for the victims or to manage the order of whoever speaks before the board. Also, when I asked earlier if there were any supporters for Mr. Hummert, I noticed that Ms. Hams is in the room. Ms. Hams, I'll just say, are you here for this hearing today?
I'm just observing.
Okay. You are in the room when I said it, so I just wanted to make sure. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Hummert, we'll continue with the hearing. What led to the escape 11 years later then?
I think that was just a continuation of the same behavior that I had, that, you know, I didn't take a lot of responsibility for myself and the fact that I was in prison, and I didn't like prison very much. And I had just reached a point where I didn't want to be there anymore. I didn't like it. And I basically started looking for an opportunity to leave the prison, to escape. And when I finally found one, I took advantage of that. I never thought about the consequences that would have, both for myself, for the staff that were around me, for my family, for my children, for the victim, for her family, because I read later on that she was quite scared when I escaped. And I never, you know, this was 10 or 11 years after I came to prison, it never even dawned on me about that. And when I got captured and brought back and found out all those things, it really bothered me a lot.
When you escaped in 2000, where were you in your rehabilitation? I mean, did you still have fantasies about sexual assault? Now, and let me stop here. I recognize we're not here to retry a case, and we're certainly not here to make new cases, so to speak, but where were you at in your rehabilitation in 2000?
For me personally, I mean, there's no way for me to prove anything that I say about how I was feeling at the time, but I wasn't thinking about those kinds of fantasies anymore. When I finally come to prison after committing this crime, I think it really bothered me a lot, because I just felt like I couldn't believe that I had committed this crime. I really couldn't believe it. And I think I went overboard or out of my way to make sure that I didn't think like that anymore, that I didn't have those fantasies, that I wasn't doing the same types of behaviors, like thinking about women or stalking women or anything like that.
I recognize you've had sexual offender treatment inside the Department of Corrections. Did you have any SOTP before the escape in 2000?
No, sir.
So what sort of SOTP have you had since? And I think you've had more than one program, or am I misreading that?
No, sir. It's broken down into different levels, and it depends upon the custody level that I was in at the time. The first program I did was called Starting Over, which is basically a pre-treatment program that attempts to identify if there are any factors that are included in your sexual treatment, like substance abuse or alcohol abuse. And then the second one was an intensive treatment program, which was taught by a licensed substance abuse counselor, and that was focused mainly on the addiction side of substances like drugs or alcohol. And for me, it was alcohol. And then the third one, which I've just recently been involved in, is the main program. It's a year-long program, and when it's completed, the therapist will issue a summary based on her treatment of me over the year. And that's the one that I'm in right now. I have not completed that one.
I think we both agree that alcohol in and of itself wasn't the reason why you committed this violent crime. But have you attended any AA, or, well, let me back up, did you have a full drinking or alcoholism, drinking problem or alcoholism at the time of the crime?
Yeah, I I never thought about it at the time. I certainly didn't recognize it back then. But I think I was what you would call a functional drunk. I could drink large amounts of alcohol and I could still function, like drive a car or walk down the street. But my thought process, you know, your thinking is affected by that kind of addiction where you lose inhibitions, things that would normally act as a block to you doing something. You don't have them anymore, which is why, in my opinion, that's why a lot of people who drive when they're drunk is because once you start drinking, you don't think about the factors of getting in a car and what it could do if you end up getting in a wreck or causing an accident. And for me, it was the same thing, that it took away the inhibitions. And I think now when I look back on it, I realize that I was doing it on purpose to lose the inhibitions. I knew that if I drank enough alcohol, I wouldn't stop myself from doing some of the things I was thinking about or fantasizing about.
So if you change, so to speak, when do you think you changed? When did the sexual fantasies stop?
Well, I think that part of it changed immediately when I came to prison. I think just the shock of what I had done, even though I didn't admit it to anybody else, I think for me, the shock of what I had done just bothered me so much that part of it was pretty much gone. The part that wasn't gone is the fact that I hadn't matured in my mind or in my emotions, and I still blamed a lot of other things for my own behavior, my own choices, my own actions. And there was no one day when that started to change. I think the thing that drove it, the impetus behind it, was when I escaped and I came back to prison and I was placed into a supermax unit, and at that time I thought I was going to be there the rest of my life. And just sitting there day after day and thinking about it, I realized that I didn't like the way I'd been living my life until that point. And I knew I had to change, and it wasn't something I changed overnight. It wasn't like I just said, oh, I'm going to stop doing this one behavior. It was something that came and built some pieces over the next few years, and it's something I'm still working on even today. Like today, I know for myself, I do a lot of self-talk. When I realize that something's bothering me, I talk it through, and I talk to myself, I remind myself to accept responsibility for it, not to blame whatever outside thing I think might be causing something. I say, no, this is my responsibility, this is my choice and my action.
How do you reconcile with almost killing the victim? Because I know that's not one of the charges, but I read this case, it's hard for me to not consider how close you came to killing this innocent victim.
Yes, sir. It's something I think about probably almost every day, if not every day. I think part of it is because as my own daughters have gotten older, you know, I think that the same thing could have happened to them and how would I have felt about that. And the fact that I could have killed somebody really sinks in and really bothers me a lot, because that was not something I was thinking, and certainly isn't something I'm thinking today or will ever think about again. I don't want to hurt anybody. I feel horrible that I did it. And if there was anything I could do to change that, to help the victim, I would do that.
Thank you, sir. Do you have a relationship that continues with family members?
I do. Not with my children, my daughters. When I escaped, my ex-wife was a good woman, and she did the right thing. She stopped letting him come down to visit me because she didn't think I was a good influence on them, but she does allow me to keep writing them. And they're adults today, and I still like them, but they just haven't chosen to have a relationship with me.
Thank you for being so candid. At this point, I'm going to ask my fellow board members if they have any questions. Yes, the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse.
Thank you, Mr. Quinones. Mr. Hummer, how did you come to select this particular victim? Was this someone that you knew, or was it just random?
It wasn't somebody I knew. It was just random. I'd been drinking that night. I had left a party. I think about 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm not really sure what time I left. And I was just driving around the city, and I was just fantasizing my mind about wanting to have sex with somebody, basically forcing somebody to have sex with me. And it was just a random choice that I made, and I followed this person to where they stopped and got out of their car, and that's when I approached them and attacked them.
But Mr. Hummer, the record reflects that she had seen your vehicle other places following earlier that evening. Had you been following her?
Yes, ma'am. I think I followed her for probably at least 30 minutes, if not longer. I'm not really sure of the time because I'm just not sure how long I was out driving around. I know it was at least an hour, and I don't remember seeing her immediately, but I think I followed her for at least 30 minutes, if not longer.
And then were you waiting for an opportunity? Was that it, or?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, I was waiting for a point where if she reached some place where there's nobody else around, and I thought I could be comfortable taking what I wanted, I thought that would be somewhere during the point where I was following her. It ended up being in front of her home, which I didn't know at the time.
Okay. So you've taken sex offender treatment, and you're in the class now. Where do you think the anger came from? I mean, that was a violent offense. Where did that come from inside of you? Where did that come from?
Yes, ma'am. I think that stemmed from probably earlier in my life when I left West Point. I think I was very unhappy about that decision. And I think that anger just continued to build inside me over the next 10 years.
And then my last question for you is, you had a gun. Where did you just routinely carry your gun in your car, or?
No, ma'am, it wasn't a real gun, it was a fake gun.
Okay, it was a fake gun.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Quinones.
Thank you, Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse. Any further questions from fellow board members? Okay, Mr. Hummer, I did have a follow-up question because my colleague did mention something that I saw in my research and I forgot to make a note of it, and that is that you had been accepted by West Point.
Yes.
I recognize that that competition, or just being accepted by West Point, is an ordeal. What happened at West Point? Why didn't you stay involved in the program?
I think that for me at the time I was 17 years old, and I was, like I said before, I think I was very immature, and I just wasn't capable of making responsible decisions. And there was a period of time where the classwork got to be too much to me, and I copied a story from a book and turned it in as my own work, and it was caught as plagiarism. And rather than face an honor board and probably get demerits and have to go to summer school, I just said that was it for me, and I left. And I think that was the beginning of a time of really bad decisions for me, that I just didn't take responsibility for my own actions. And that was probably the very first time I can remember where I made a decision that was blaming something else. I was blaming the coursework for being too hard, or just blaming other people for not being able to study enough.
Well, Mr. Leonard, I'm not a psychologist, but you must have been able to really put on a mask back then, because I know how competitive the West Point appointment process is, and they must have been impressed that you were capable and very mature.
Yes, ma'am.
So were you a bit of a social chameleon?
I think for a long time, for a part of my life, I was. I think that I did all the right things and I said all the right things, so people thought about me a certain way. But inside, I think I was hiding what I was really thinking and feeling. And I think that probably led to a lot of bad decisions that I made because I wasn't being honest. I wasn't being open with people.
Thank you, Mr. Hummel. Again, any further questions from fellow board members? I will, for the sake of protocol, make sure, do we have any supporters for Mr. Hummel in the room today? Okay, we have no supporters. This is the time that I'm going to move along to victims' representatives. So, ma'am, would you like to take the podium?
Sir, if I could have just a moment to talk to the victims in this case to see which one
sure,
to take first.
Sure. Just a moment so we can start the testimonies on record.
Yes, Your Honor. My understanding is there is a representative that's been on the phone currently that is accompanying to the victim that would like to speak first.
Okay, excellent. And ma'am, on the telephone?
Yes, hi.
Can you state your full name for the record again? And because I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing your last name correctly.
Yes, Robin Jean Jehola.
Jehola. Okay. And what would you like to show the board today, ma'am?
The victim has asked me to read her letter of opposition, and then I would like to speak on behalf of the family.
Okay, very well. Thank you.
Thank you. Dear board members, I come before you today, one day shy of Hummer's conviction 27 years ago, as a designated victim representative, as well as speaking on behalf of our family, friends, and our community. Prior to the April 2016 hearing, Mary Ray explained to me in great but painful detail as to why she did not want to be present at these hearings. It is my perspective that you are all educated and wise members of this board and can fully understand why this would be a traumatic experience for any victim, but particularly for a victim who was brutally assaulted, raped, kidnapped, and left for dead. While Mary Ray may be legally my cousin, we were born only 4 months apart and grew up together as sisters. So I come before you today, not only as her victim rep, but also as her sister. We understand you have received many letters from the community in opposition of granting Hummer's request, including in opposition of denying Hummer's request, including letters from the Tempe Police Department, the lead detective in the investigation, Gary Lemikus, and the Maricopa County Attorney, Bill Montgomery. We understand that there is an extensive amount of case history for Hummer, and we also understand that you have an enormous amount of responsibility at hand. Therefore, at the request of the victim, Mary Ray, I will be reading her personal letter of appeal to you to deny his request. Please note, Mary Ray wrote this letter of opposition in 2016 and stated that she could not bear continuing to write these in the future and asked me to resubmit as necessary. On the morning of July 16, 1989, my world got turned upside down and became my biggest nightmare I will ever experience. It is a nightmare that recurs daily, even 30 years later. I, Mary Ray H.E. Adams, was 19 years old when I became the victim of Stephen Henry Hummer. I will be referring to him as the monster in my life because no man with a conscience would or could have committed such violence to any woman or girl. This monster stalked me for who knows how long until he got the confidence to follow through with his heinous violence that early morning. First, I saw his car several times throughout the evening. I did not realize he was following me, but thought it was simply coincidental that I kept seeing the same red Honda CRX throughout my return home that night. When I arrived at my home in Tempe and began to exit my car, he was at my door, half dressed. He makes me get out of my car, put a gun to my head, and forces me to my neighbor's yard. Then, he forcibly removed my pants and raped me. I tried to fight back and bit him profusely on his arm. He couldn't perform like he wanted to, and then he forces me on my hands and knees and begins choking me by wrapping his hands around my throat and beating my head with the butt of his gun or the brick that surrounded the base of my neighbor's tree. He then told me if I ever told anyone, he would, quote, be back to kill me, end quote. Finally, he left. I laid there until he was gone, as I was afraid he would come back and rape me again, or worse, kill me. When I was finally able to get up, I realized my head was wet. I thought he had urinated on me, but once I was under my porch light, I realized I was drenched in blood. Once I was able to reach my front door, I rang the doorbell, as I no longer had my keys or purse. My dad opened the peep door first and screamed, "Oh my God." I began screaming, "Hurry, hurry," to get me inside because I was so frightened that he would return to kill me. I kept yelling at my mom, "He has a gun." Next thing I knew, firemen and police surrounded me. As the paramedics were beginning to assess my injuries, the police began taking my statement. Then I was quickly rushed to the hospital due to the severe blunt force trauma and multiple lacerations to my head. I kept asking the paramedics, "Why me? Why me?" Once at the hospital, I agreed to the rape kit test. Then the doctors brought in a surgeon who needed to begin surgery immediately. They told me they would be putting me under, and I begged them not to because I was afraid I wasn't going to wake up. The surgeon admitted during the trial that this was one of the worst head traumas he had ever seen, as my head looked like, quote, raw chicken skin, raw quote, end quote. In the end, I required over 300 stitches to repair the multiple lacerations to my head. I am confident that you will have my case history and trial proceedings and feel that I do not need to add those to my letter. What you are not able to read in any of those proceedings is a lifelong sentence I will endure due to these outrageous acts of violence. First, I spent approximately a year in fear of my life until he was captured and sent to jail while he awaited trial. Then I spent another year preparing for trial and reliving that night over and over again, including in front of him and a jury for 6 weeks. Furthermore, the physical nightmares of that night torment me most nights. Every time I brush my hair, I am reminded of this rape. The violence, having a gun held to my head, being beaten, my life being threatened, and left for dead. I found a small amount of security when he was convicted on 6 counts of felony, sentenced to life, and restitution to me for over $8,000. As I understand, he was given the maximum sentence due to his prior felony conviction in Texas, where he spent 8 years in prison. Unfortunately, that tiny morsel of security was stripped from me and my family in 2000, when he paid a prison maintenance worker $700 to hide him in an empty air conditioning box and drive him out of the prison and to an undisclosed location in the Phoenix metro area. I was immediately alerted and placed on lockdown. This lockdown also affected my immediate family members and Cindy Minetti, the state prosecutor. All of this monster eluded the FBI for 6 weeks. He was finally located in Eugene, Oregon, where he was caught shoplifting. He was booked into the Lane County Jail for shoplifting, identity theft, and several fraudulent scheme charges, and then extradited back to Arizona, where he was sentenced to 2B counts for escaping prison and given an additional 3¾-year sentence to begin at the end of his life term. In approximately 2011, the lead trial detective, Gary Lemikas, approached me stating that Hummer asked for me to receive and read a letter of apology and confession following confession to a dying mom. I was simply repulsed and couldn't bear the pain and trauma of having any contact with him, and therefore I denied his request. Prior to his confession, as stated above, he had no remorse and pleaded with the court on his innocence. On several occasions, he appealed his conviction on multiple different grounds, and each time the courts denied his appeal. Last week, my world was once again turned upside down when a Tempe detective notified me that this monster had petitioned the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency to release him from his 6 counts of felony sentencing for aggravated assault, kidnapping, sexual assault, and sexual abuse so he can begin serving his sentencing for conspiracy to escape second degree and escape second degree. I understand that minimum sentence is 25 years. I understand that as of September 2016, he will have served that 25 years. However, he was sentenced to 6 concurrent life sentences. Had these not been imposed concurrently, he would have been sentenced to 130 years in prison. When this monster raped and beat me at gunpoint, he sentenced me to life. Furthermore, at the time of this brutal attack on me at his hand, he was already a convicted felon on probation. Approximately 10 years later, he created a premeditated plan of escape from prison where he continued his illegal behavior. I am sentenced to life. With his record, do you really believe that he should be eligible to complete his sentencing for this life term and not continue his abuse and illegal actions in our community? I do believe he should be eligible for this. I do not believe he should be eligible for this opportunity, and I beg the board to deny his request. I beg the board to keep myself and others in our community and around our nation protected from his violent behavior and manipulative ways. As much as I would like to have the ability to be present for this hearing, I cannot put myself through any more of this related trauma. I ask the board to recognize this letter as though I was present and speaking directly to you. My life, my security, now lies in your hands. That's the end of Mary Lee's letter. On behalf of her family, I read. The lead detective on this case at the time, Gary Lamikas, can recall the details stating, quote, this is one of the worst crimes I have ever witnessed with the Tempe Police Department, end quote. Additionally, the surgeon who performed the surgery on Mary Ray states, quote, this was one of the worst scalp traumas I have ever seen in my career, end quote. I also want to bring to your attention that during his April 28, 2016 hearing, the one person that spoke to his character was discovered by one of your board members to have been the same person that provided him contraband while visiting him in prison. Do you understand the amount of trauma the victim and her family have suffered throughout the years from this violent assault to escaping prison and to enduring the preparation for today and the hearing itself? As I come before you, I thoughtfully considered my own consequences of speaking on behalf of Mary Ray, our family, and our community. I put myself at risk today to oppose Hammer's request. I am personally afraid for my own safety should he ever be released, as his final words to her were, I will come back and kill you. In fact, my husband and I have relocated out of state, leaving our family and friends, partially in fear of his retaliation. He has shown psychiatric tendencies toward violence, and if he's willing to kill her, why not go after other members of her family, including me? We ask you, whatever caused a person to commit such extreme violence, sexual assault, overkill, or beating someone, and act as heinous as his, can that be managed? He's been in a structured environment and the psychiatric issues haven't been addressed. If you were to put him back into the community, would he continue to act on his violent tendencies? There are no indications provided to this board that show Hammer is not a risk to society. During the April 16, 2016 and December 11, 2017 hearing, I addressed the board with the inmate present inquiring about the restitution of $8,000 that is yet to be received. We were assured on both occasions that this would be resolved, that 27 years post-conviction, not a dime of restitution has been received. If Hummer was rehabilitated and remorseful for his actions, he would begin showing some remorse by ensuring his financial obligation to Mary Ray was paid in full. Lastly, during the December 11, 2017 hearing, Hummer admitted that he has control issues and triggers. He also stated that he had yet to receive any formal therapy to aid in his own rehabilitation of drinking control issues, not taking responsibility for his actions, and more importantly, his impulse to assault, rape, and kidnap. With Hummer's severe psychological disorder, has the board received any psychiatric evaluations that prove he is not a threat to himself or society? Has the board received any records of Hummer not only participating in the proper education, but also the intensive ongoing therapy that would be required for anyone attempting to combat these disorders? Whatever caused Hummer to commit such extreme violence will never be resolved. These types of impulses can be attempted to be managed, much like a recovering addict with the ability to resort back to their prior addictions at any time. Hummert has been in a structured environment and contained from assaulting and raping women for the past 27 years. Incarceration does not mean or even imply recovered. In fact, statistics prove that the likelihood of repeated criminal offenses are highly likely, and undoubtedly you are aware of those reports and statistics. In closing, Hummert was sentenced to 25 years to life on multiple horrific felonies. What these felonies and sentences don't include is what Hummert stole from Mary Ray and her family, a life without debilitating trauma. Hummert's brutal assault, rape, premeditated, and executed prison escape, continuing a life of crime following his escape, and his own statement that he has control issues, heavily drank, and still has triggers, is a person with tremendous psychological disorders and is clearly a threat to Mary Ray, members of our family, and our community. And even just a few minutes ago, he admitted that he did and said all the right things, that he wasn't being honest. So what leads us to believe that he isn't being a social chameleon today, and that he's being honest today? That's probably one of my biggest questions now. On behalf of Mary Ray, her family, her friends, and our community, respectfully request that you deny Hummert his request. We also request that you set off any additional hearings for a minimum of 1 year in respect of the victim and her family. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Jehovah, and thank you for such a detailed statement. I will now again yield to the prosecutor, and who would you like to speak next?
Your Honor, the detective that was the case agent in this case would like to address the board.
Thank you, ma'am.
Ma'am, gentlemen, I'm Gary Romikis, and I have since retired several years ago, but I was the case agent on this, as you've heard, with a detailed description of what happened, so I won't reiterate any of that. Just that I'm here on my own time. I'm not getting paid for anything. It's in my best interest to represent the aging family because I've dealt with them throughout this whole ordeal and to this day. And if you have any questions for me, I'd be willing to answer it. Otherwise, I would yield to the next speaker. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir, as always. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir, and the victim's brother would like to speak.
Thank you, ma'am. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. My name is John A.G. Ross. I'm married to her brother. One of the details that wasn't mentioned in her statement, because she always wanted to exclude me to protect me, was that at 4:45 approximately in the morning, 4:30, when my father opened that door, I was standing there with him. I got to see my beautiful sister, who had the typical 80s rocker-teased blonde hair with acid-washed jeans and a white t-shirt, looking like something out of a movie from Carrie, covered in blood. I remember watching my family having to clean that house. I remember my neighborhood trying to recoup from it. And I sit here and watch this man talk. This is my third time. Every time I see the story change a little bit, but one thing I don't see is him just flat out admitting that he did it, that he was at fault. He can't blame anything else. He can't blame tendencies or triggers. He did it. The things he didn't tell you in his statement and the questions you asked, like the fact that he told you that he was in trouble in Texas for robbing or for stealing from a McDonald's. The day after he raped my sister, in fact, let me rephrase that, hours after he raped my sister, he was located at the McDonald's right down the street from our house working as a manager. The people he had cover for him when he gave his first story were his co-workers from McDonald's that he threatened to cover his story. This man has led a life of lies, running, and everything else. He's proved it when he left Texas. He proved it when he came here. When he says that he doesn't know what, he didn't, you know, it just happened, he didn't, you know, do anything to stalk my sister that night. I don't know how familiar you are with Arizona or Tempe, especially East Valley. He followed her from rural and Apache out into Scottsdale. And when I say Scottsdale, we're talking Thomas Road and approximately 56th Street, back to our house, which we still live in at this day, and Broadway and Hardy in Tempe. That's not just, oh, I saw her and I decided I wanted it. Because one of the stops that she made with, she went to go see if her boyfriend was home, because he worked the night shift, and sometimes he got off early. She pulled up in front of his house and waited several minutes before she left, which is when she noticed this car again. So this wasn't random. This man has still not accepted it. I won't go into the fact that the one issue that I do wish to carry for the family is that he stole her life. He changed her life forever and made her live in fear, but as my cousin just said a few minutes ago, he did it to a whole family. Because of his escape in 2000, which he just kind of shrugs off as I was just didn't like it there anymore. I ended up on my knees with gun barrels in my face when I went to my own house because they were afraid he was going to be there. Every night when I come home, I greet any women coming to our house because we still fear for somebody walking up on somebody over there. The bushes are gone. The neighborhood is better well lit. Due to rentals and Tempe issue students, we have more traffic, which is a nice thing. But that planter is still there, and the possibility is still there. And as we hit you on everything else, I'm sorry you guys hear it over and over every single time. But everybody benefits by this man staying right where he's at. He hasn't proven, and like we've said, he was convicted, in actuality, according to the thing, to 6, and I believe it was reduced to 5, life sentences after an appeal. That's life with the possibility of parole at 25. That's what the law says. It did not say 25 years, then maybe life we can keep you for. This man doesn't deserve to be out. I know that he says, I want to be a father. I went, well, he should have thought about that before. I think about it every single day. I'm 43 years old. I'm not perfect. I'm not an angel. I've had my own run-ins with the law. But when I decided I was going to be a dad, when I decided I wanted to take care of my family, and when I made promises to my sister, I kept them, and I straightened out my life, saying I want to do it after the fact and then continuing the life of what I've seen up until 2009, getting in trouble in prison, escaping, paying people. And he's right. We lived in fear for 6 weeks when he was out before. How do you think we'll feel when he's out permanently? Thank you.
Sir, before you leave, I want to ask my fellow board members any question, and I will follow up.
Okay.
I do want to apologize for pronouncing your sister's name wrong. I hear so many cases. No, I had a brain cramp, so sorry.
We've grown up.
It's Mary Ray Agee, correct?
Agee, yes, sir.
Thank you, and I apologize for that. Thank you.
Sir, can I just one moment?
Yes.
Thank you, sir. Again, my name is Crystal.
Oh, yeah.
I don't mean to interrupt, sir. Board, my name is Crystal Dickinson. I'm a deputy county.
If you want to take the phone. Sorry, for the record.
I understand. My name is Crystal Dickinson. I'm a deputy county attorney. Originally, there was a fellow county attorney that was in my office that has researched this a little bit more, so I don't know all the details. She's unable to make the hearing this afternoon. But we have looked at the facts, and we've also contacted the initial deputy county attorney that was on this case where it was tried. And, Your Honor, the state would oppose any release of the defendant at this time. It's his burden to show that he should be released, and he's failed to do so. There's been no changes in the situation since the last hearing, and the board heard his petition to be released early. The only minimal changes is that he's gone through some treatment, but he's still in sex offender treatment. He has not taken the responsibility for his actions in this case, and he has not completed fully completed the treatment and any subsequent treatment that may be needed. to show that he is not a danger to the community. As the victim's family's representative first stated, that he has not shown he is no longer a threat to society. He's a danger to society based upon his actions in this case, that he used more force than necessary, and then he escaped from prison as well. From what I heard from the defendant, he blames his actions on alcohol. However, that's in contradiction to what he told the pre-sentence report writer when this initially occurred, and that he only had a moderate issue with alcohol. He also uses it as an excuse. But we know that alcohol is not an excuse or defense to crimes that a defendant commits. And yet he escaped after being years in prison where you would presume there would be no alcohol. He escaped. He's still not taking responsibility for his actions. He's having his own selfish behavior continuing. As he stated, he takes what he wants. And as he also stated, he's a chameleon. He says what he thinks others want to hear to get what he wants in a number of situations. And I believe that is what is happening today, though he has yet to state anything to warrant his release. The reason he states that what led him to his change of mindset when the question was asked was that his escape, and like it didn't dawn on him what the effect would be to the victim or their family. That again goes to show his own selfish behavior. As well as that is what led him to start taking the treatment, the alcohol treatment, sex offender treatment. The restrictions when he was placed in Supermax, and the fact that he was no longer in direct contact with his family and his daughters. Again, shows that his actions are based upon his own selfish needs. And what he wants, he takes, be that in prison or be that out in society. If this case were heard today, Your Honor, or gentlemen, ma'am, the sentences would likely run consecutive, not concurrent as they are. That would mean a minimum of 25 years plus another 25 years, plus any other counts that would be consecutive. If the case was heard today, I can go over the facts of the case, the horrific acts that he did, the harm to the victim, the harm that is still to the victim's family when they opened that door and saw their sister, their daughter, laying on the ground, the laceration she had to her head, the surgery she had to have, the doctor at the time that stated that the defendant was trying to kill her. Gentlemen, lady, ma'am, the defendant should not be released from the Department of Corrections. There has been no change in the circumstances to the last. He has not shown that he would not be a danger to the community. We ask that you deny his request.
Thank you. Just to make sure, do we have any other victims' representatives who are going to speak before the board today? Okay, Mr. Hummert, we're getting very close to the end of your hearing. Is there a final statement you would like to make to the board before we go into discussion? We only ask that you don't repeat anything that you've already told us, but this is your hearing. So is there anything else that you feel is important for us to know or understand before this board deliberates? Thank you, sir.
Thank you. I guess as I listen to all the victims' representatives, the thing that bothers me the most is how many lives I've affected, how many lives I've destroyed. It's just really, I'm sure it's hard for you to hear, and it's even for me it's hard to hear, even though I know I'm the one that caused it. You asked a question earlier about if I was a chameleon of sorts, and I admitted to you that yes, for most of my life, I think I was. I think that I did try to do and say the right things based upon what I thought people wanted to hear. And I hope that today and in the future, you'll remember that. I'm not telling you what I want you to hear. I'm telling you the truth, and I'm trying to be as open and as honest as I can be about everything. And sometimes I don't have an answer to your questions. And I just hope that I can answer as openly and as truthfully as I can. And thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hummert. The board will be going into discussion now. It may sound like that we're speaking with you directly, but it is the board discussing the case amongst itself under the open meeting laws of Arizona. So if we'll just remain on the phone, we'll come back to you shortly with our decision. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
The board is now in discussion. Fellow board members, I recognize that Mr. Hundert has completed an impressive amount of programming and that he has not had discipline for 10 years, and he's to be commended for that. But I question whether it serves the interest of justice, especially in the face of a traumatized victim, that is to say a victim who is disturbed to the point of needing a designated victim's representative year after year to grant parole to a next consecutive sentence to an individual who committed such a deliberate, violent, and heinous act only to escape from prison, that is to say the Arizona Department of Corrections, 11 years later. And I think that's where I'll begin the discussion. Thank you. Yes, the Honorable Ms. Gilman.
Thank you, Mr. Canales. I would just add that even the behavior continued after the escape because Mr. Hummel was captured, accused, I think, of shoplifting and some other fraudulent activity. So it continued even beyond that. And I just I don't see any reason, based on anything I've heard today, to suspect there's been a change. Thank you, Mr. Quinones.
Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. Yes, the Honorable Mr. David Will.
Thank you, sir. Got my microphone. I just want to bring up a point to it caught kind of by fast when it kind of caught my attention. In the year 2000, Mr. Hummert had $700 to pay someone else to help him escape from prison. But yet, even though since he's been back from that little escapade, he's been working. I know it's a very small amount of money he's been working. But he had $700 that he could pay to escape, but he hadn't made 1 cent on his restitution. And from personal experience, I know that when an inmate is in there, and it can be set up where a third of their money is taken away from them and sent to the victims, whoever is entitled to restitution. I get checks for as little as $3 for 2 months, and it's restitution from a lifer. So, you know, that in itself bothers me that he can save up that $700 or get it from friends, relatives, whatever, and he hasn't made any attempt to pay the ordered restitution in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. Dr. Wright.
Yes, as you know, this is my third time, I believe, listening to Mr. Henry, and I haven't heard anything to change my mind. I think that, yes, we have to be concerned about the defendant. We have to be concerned about the state of Arizona. We also have to be concerned especially for the victims. And I haven't seen anything or heard anything today that would make me change my mind from last year or the year before. Therefore, I don't believe that he should be moved to his next parole, to his next consecutive sentence. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Board Chairman. After hearing from my colleagues, I will go ahead and make a motion. That is regarding Mr. Stephen Hummert, ADC number 089109. My motion is to deny parole to the next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. And I'm also asking for a 1 year set off based on the year of the crime.
Second.
Agree.
Seconded by the Honorable Mr. Neal. Agreed upon by the Honorable Dr. Wright. And the Honorable Ms. Gil Rittenhouse. Again, I'm asking for a 1 year set off. Release type denied. 412B, parole to next consecutive sentence and absolute discharge. And my reasons for denial are as follows: serious and violent offense, serious and deviant offense, trauma to the victim, age of the victim, serious bodily injury. It's a victim harassment. If I'm not mistaken, there was a threat to return. Criminal history, violation of previous probation. Prior criminal history. No family or community support system. Any further input from my colleagues? Okay, Mr. Hummer. The board has voted unanimously to deny parole to your next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. Did you hear the reasons for our denial?
Yes, sir, I did. Except for the last one that you said?
The last one was no family or community support system.
I'm not sure what that means.
Well, we didn't have any support here in the room. We didn't hear any phone calls. I don't think, did we have any new letters? Did we have new letters, sir?
I believe so.
In good faith, I'll strike that because I did recognize that there were some support letters. I was going more from the perspective that we had no one in the hearing room or no one to make phone calls. So
a lot of my family members are at the age where they can't travel very easily, so they weren't able to make it on such short notice.
Well, thank you for pointing that out. In fairness, I'm striking that. Okay, sir?
Okay, thank you, sir.
Okay. This will conclude our hearing. I want to thank my colleagues and thank everybody in the hearing room today.
Thank you.
And thank you, ma'am, and we're going to disconnect the phone. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you, you as well.
Thank you.